Hello, everybody, and welcome back to UCC's 98.3 FM. This is Paul Talk from UCC's Government and Politics Society. My name's Alice, and I'm here with
Caitlin
and Jack.
And we're going to talk about a bit of politics today. First, I have to talk about Polity. Jack is part of Polity, which is our student newspaper for GovPol, and we recently, I have no involvement, Polity published their spring edition, and it's actually, you have it here.
I bought it in, came prepared.
It's very exciting. I have mine actually, I'll grab
that. Good. Do you want one, Caitlin?
I have mine at home.
We'll have it here.
We're going to do a group reading. Yeah.
That's what today's hour will be. Yeah. But it's really professional looking.
It is fab.
Thank you. Yeah, no, it was the editor, Sean, and deputy editor, Connor, and then we had 10 articles submitted by not just Government and Politics students. We had, there's a mix of articles on loads of different themes and topics. The overall arching theme of the magazine was Brave New World. And then we had, articles on everything from EU enlargement to power sharing pains looking at Northern Ireland. And the last article was The Price of Opposing Putin. So it looked at all the opposition leaders in Russia, from Anna Politkovskaya and up to Alexei Navalny, who passed away or was murdered, I suppose, recently at the start of the year. So again, it's a great way of just showcasing students' work.
Very good,
I kind of couldn't. You don't ask me for my favourite one because that's not fair to highlight one.
I haven't got a chance to read it yet, but like some of the topics in there are so exciting. I feel like we're a bit of like political nerds saying to read, but it's so interesting.
Yeah, no, this really one on AI is brilliant. I was reading it earlier and it is a fab article, especially with the examples of AI doctoring images at the bottom.
It was very
Page 36, honestly.
Everyone turn to page 36.
We should have said to listeners to have the PDF open on the, go to the link tree in the GovPol Instagram account.
There'll be a quiz on the Instagram later.
To make sure you
give
listen
away
to it.
For the best listener.
So it did, and that was by Matthew Quill, who's the postgrad rep on the Students' Union.
It was a brilliant one.
Yeah, and we had some return contributors from last year, which was always a good sign.
Yeah, I do recognise a few names.
It means we didn't scare them off last year.
You'll be looking for more submissions, I presume, for next year's articles.
Definitely, and actually, not to make an announcement that hasn't been made yet, but we will be looking for the new editor very soon. So then people can start thinking about that.
Socials.
Definitely.
Alice,
definitely.
You're on it.
Yeah?
You're on it.
I'm on what?
You're
on
the names
at
the
end. In it.
Alice, you're famous.
Yeah.
And Polity, just for anyone who doesn't know, is free and can be found on campus. You can send us a DM if you're struggling to find one and we can get on to you and get you one.
They're the newspaper stand in the Boo Library and the Socks office. There should be copies. We'll replenish them this morning. Hopefully they'll be gone.
Everyone pick up a copy of Polity Spring Edition 2024.
We would be really offended if you don't.
That's an iconic cover. Everyone does. Yeah. Own it.
We want to see the red magazines around campus.
Yeah. Yes. It reminds me of like Times People of the Year kind of thing.
Yeah, I know. I think Sean had a vision for it, the editor, and wanted to do something like a Time cover.
It's very cool.
So there's a challenge always to work within what the guidelines are given, but I think it does look, and it's different enough to the one we did last year, but it keeps the continuity going in terms of the colour and the style is pretty, similar. We want to do something different, but not so different that there's...
Definitely.
It's timeless, honestly.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
It's timeless and it's very eye-catching.
Yeah. And I feel like people, once they read this, are going to be really excited to get in their own submissions as well.
Oh, definitely. And I think because we have the website as well, we should be able to just submit whenever there's something, a topic you feel like you would like
you're
to have your voice heard on it, to send a Polity at societies.ie.
Very friendly group, willing to take submissions.
And you get it published, you can say, published.
Yeah, something for the CV, if anything.
But as you were saying earlier, we're all politics hacks, so it's something we get excited about anyway.
I heard this person, they're doing a postgrad in law, but they did GovPol as their first one. And they're like, there's two people in GovPol. Paul, or like in political courses, it's you're either really obsessed with it or you absolutely hate politics. And we definitely fall on the other side of the spectrum.
Yes, yeah, yeah. We all know people who are doing the course who don't like it, and you're wondering, why are you here?
Why are you here? Yeah.
But we're not one of those.
No.
We're the losers who are obsessed with politics.
No, it's the same. There's people like sport or something, and we like politics.
That's that's true. I think we've had a few political dramas throughout the week. And I think before we get into it, we might play a little song, and then we could touch on, you know, Irish politics, and then we maybe take a look at the wider world.
Yeah,
does that work?
Sounds
for
good with me.
So again, I do this every week. I use Caitlin's podcast, like her playlist, and I'm going to put on Tangerine by Noah Richardson.
Too good at living. You know I'm a storm chaser, babe. I don't stop believing. Me and you got a lot to say. Stuck in my bed sheets. Your scent's sweet like tangerines. Doing what I can do to come clean. Addicted to you and your misery. No brush, but you left your toothpaste. So I won't forget how you taste. Been going out all place to place, but all I look for is your face.
tears me down. Everybody plays a beautiful game while I'm in Brazil. Cause it's all you've ever wanted, and it's all that you want still. Don't you wanna play the beautiful game out in Brazil?
Okay, and we're back. That was Brazil from Declan McKenna.
Say it again.
Yeah, 1 week I notoriously played, I don't know what song I played twice.
You played the Hosier. Brandy Carlisle.
Maybe
song.
I just really like that song, guys.
I'm not judging you.
No, we can understand it. We can understand it.
Or it was just a mistake. But anyway, moving on. I'll note not to play those songs again. So I think we're going to get into a bit of Irish politics. So we're having a bit of a, I don't want to be too presumptuous, but a bit of a far-right issue at the moment.
A little bit, I think. We've now joined the party.
Yeah, we were avoiding the whole European populist thing for a while, but now it's kind of crept up on us. So for anyone who doesn't know, about 12 masked men, it turned up outside Minister for Children's Roderick O'Gorman's house. I think it was last Thursday or maybe sometime last week. And they were basically protesting. They had a banner. So I was looking at the picture of it. They had a banner that said he hates children. And then he had small banners saying South Dublin says no, close the borders. Very interesting. And I also saw in an Irish Times article that apparently, allegedly, one of the protesters was also linked to the Dublin riots back in November. Not too surprised about that, but
no, now that
it's
you say
still
then.
Very interesting. What do we think?
It's not good.
No, and I think it's particularly relevant for us as students and our mm-hmm. classmates. I don't know what you've been hearing about it, but it has, I mean, it's kind of a trend that has been developing in the last while where the politicians are coming under, first of all, more scrutiny in their personal lives. You know, it's not, this isn't the first time that protesters have turned up outside
a house.
No, I think it's a bit different in this instance because they were masked and it was a lot more threatening.
Yeah.
But I don't know what you think about it. But I think I was surprised the guards didn't remove them.
I was very surprised there was no arrest, to be honest. It's kind of scary for politicians that, you know, dangerous people can show up at their home and nothing is exactly done about it.
Yeah, because like in fairness, like they're people known, they're people in power, but at the same time, they're still humans, they're still citizens of the state. Mm-hmm. So if 12 masked people showed up outside of anyone's home, they'd be escorted immediately. They could be protesting that you painted your door red. The homeowners are awful. But like, it's not acceptable either way.
Yeah, I think
do it in front of like Leinster House.
Yeah,
in front
if you want to make a
doll,
political point.
Yeah, but terrorizing someone in their own home is not good for both either politicians or a normal citizen.
No, and even constituency offices. I mean, I think there's, you know, it probably shouldn't be prevented there, but it has to stay within a certain parameter.
Yeah.
You know,
line.
You can't be threatening staff or, you know, intimidating someone outside their house. I think that's where there's a line has to be drawn somewhere. And I think most people, judging by the reaction that has been to that particular incident, is that the home is, it should be separate. I mean, everyone's entitled to their private life.
Yeah.
Yes, they're public figures and you have to be able to hold them to account. But turning up outside someone's house, masked, threatening, putting stuff up on their private property, probably crosses the line by a long shot.
Slightly, it's just kind of means of intimidation more than protest, really. It's trying to scare him, if anything. And I think that kind of goes over the line.
No, and especially when it's there's family there and stuff, it's just...
Yeah, the likelihood of him even of being at home at the time, like it was probably family and like kids, and it's just... I think it's unacceptable anyway.
You're entering a territory which we don't think we've seen in a long time. You're going into like era of politics, which, you know, this is normalized, like in South America and such. Terrorizing people in their own spaces is not acceptable, but I fear we might be going that way.
Yes, and we have, I mean, it is something that you would have seen maybe in the 1800s the politicians, that their houses would have been, you know, stoned. And we're not quite at that, but I think you have to recognise, I mean, some people said, you know, by giving it airtime and talking about it, you're somehow feeding it, but you're not.
Yeah.
I don't agree with that
I don't agree.
Argument. You have to call it out when this happens and to prevent it going
further. You
can't
let it be a normalised thing. No. I think it's unacceptable.
And definitely listening to the politicians on the radio, even some of them, you know, talking about other incidents and even acknowledging that they aren't, you know, being as open as they would like to be about it because they're afraid of the, I suppose, the silencing effect this has on young people getting into politics because it's difficult enough to already to encourage people to, and I mean, we're students and I, myself, you know, it's not something I don't think I'd like to do frontline. And the amount of people who do. And so if we're not enthusiastic about it, you know, how can you expect people who aren't?
Yeah. I think if you ask as well, anyone in our course, do you want to be a politician? The answer is no.
No, part of that is right. You know, probably a modesty thing, you know, because it is kind of a bit egocentric if you're saying, oh yeah, you know, I want to be a politician.
That's
which,
true.
Which is good because some people do. And it's not that, but I just think that it's the default is no when you ask people.
A lot of the element of it is like, it's not worth it. You're not being paid enough. The amount of harassment you get, it's just... you know, does not seem worth it to me personally anyway.
No. And I think you shouldn't, I mean, it's not that you were looking for everyone to be deferential to politicians. You know, it's a healthy argument and to disagree with people is all about what democracy is about, but you have to do it respectfully. You can't do it for, you know, this kind of vitriol and
democratic
hate. You know, just because you disagree with someone, there is a way of doing it. And sometimes you have to be forceful because some people have crazy opinions, which we won't get into, but you have to, we've now kind of, I suppose, have a discourse where people are running a mile from it, the job, you know, you look at people standing down and even it's hard to get this, and especially young people, I mean, we're not represented in politics, which is a huge issue. And then with the gender imbalance and, you know, minorities, there is issues there that we need to address, but we can't address them given
without
the current
representation
discourse.
And
the discourse is problem, so kind of it all feeds into each other and creates a downward
spiral. It's a bit
spiral.
Of a cycle. Definitely.
And if this is a continued, let's say, like team, this open harassment to opens extreme harassment to politicians, we're going to see legislation being pushed silently or being pushed down in fear of continuous harassment. So,
even a more centrist approach, I suppose, not that it's not already centrist, but you know, I think they'll be trying to appease people, but it's not really exactly possible to appease the far right as well as like pushing legislation for the people who voted for them. I think we could see, obviously, I don't think it's possible within this election, but maybe perhaps even the next, like a mobilization politically of the far right. Like at the moment, they're, you know, protesters and rioters, but when they become politicians themselves, that's when it gets quite dangerous, I think, because then they will have actual sway over legislation.
And you do have to, you know, once they get the foot in the door and get that representation, you can't silence them, or it's very hard to, and it's not that, you know, you're pro-silencing anyone, but there has to be a certain level of decorum of an acceptability of what's right and what's wrong. I mean, you can't allow for all opinions because some of them are just, you know, so hate-filled that they don't have a place in society.
They're not respectful.
No, not at all. And but I do think it is, as you were saying at the top of the segment, that it's an issue that we're just starting to see in Ireland a little bit more. I mean, Europe and America have been so far ahead of us on this that we're kind of now I hate to use the phrase catching up, because you prefer if we didn't get there.
This is something I wish we didn't catch up on.
But I think, and I hopefully we won't get to, as, I don't think we'll get to as bad as them, because we've seen how what happens, and there are, you know, can be measures put in place to ensure that we don't end up in that scenario. And we're also lucky in Ireland that we do have, by and large, centrist parties in the main. People like to think that, you know, Fine Gael, Fianna Fáil, they're more centre-right, and Sinn Féin's centre-left parties, but they're more towards the centre than in other countries where there's a lot clearer divide.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. I think it'll be interesting to see how the far right in the European elections, how that'll affect then our general election. I suppose if they start to bring in, more right-wing policies, will that appease the far right here? Or is the EU on their radar? I don't know. I think it's an interesting development. Not that I want to see it happen, but definitely something to examine.
Now, the European elections will be the tell of how the future of Europe will be.
Definitely.
For the fact that there's fast-tracking legislation to get it in before the far right come in is like telling enough.
It is.
Yeah.
It'll just, I think everyone's expecting them to get in, and it's to the extent that they get in. And even the locals here will be interesting too, because there's a lot of local candidates that, you know, might be classed as, it could be far right. And so if they get a foot in, what are the implications for that for the general? But having said that, I think our electoral system and that, it, you know, it makes it harder in a good way for people who have fringe views to get in, because you need to have a kind of a consensus in your community to get elected.
Yeah.
So there are positives, but it just, I think the next few months will tell a lot.
Mm. Definitely.
Yeah.
Interesting times.
Very depressing topic.
Great way to start the morning, Alice. Yeah.
Well, the news, unfortunately, in politics, it usually tends to be about bad stuff. There's always a problem.
You're never happy after reading the news in politics. Never.
Everyone's like, I'm not reading polity now after this.
No, it was
really happy, guys.
No, it's happy.
We'll have to stick a few jokes in or something next year.
Just like every 10 pages. Look, it's okay, guys. Here's a good story.
I know, like Global Justice on their like Instagram, they have positive news of the week, which I think is great, because it's like, wow, okay, the world isn't actually completely burning. There are good things happening. Yes. Yeah.
Yes.
We're not in summer yet.
There are a few good things happening, so I like that. I'm like, we need to do something like that.
No, and the iron politics itself can be quite, you know, it's problem-centred, naturally, because people are getting into it to fix a problem. But you know, sometimes you do have to recognise that stuff is getting better and give credit where credit's due. It's very hard to do sometimes, especially when you disagree with maybe the government or something on other issues, but there is progress being made. But it's this, I suppose, focus on just negative issues the whole time, which does feed into this sense of nothing's going right, nothing's happening.
Sense of doom.
And what feeds into people like not engaging with politics.
100%.
I was reading a very interesting article. God, that sounds so like stuck up, but like a really interesting article, and it was like, because of the height of like bad, like poor and depressing and upsetting political news, people are less than likely to engage because it just increases their like sense of doom. So that's why you see low voter turnout. That's why you see people not even engaging in their local communities, because all they're like, it's just bad. They don't see the good in it. So maybe we should be starting to just put a spin on the good stuff, but that doesn't exist. So it's just a continuous loop of depression.
Yeah, it's a bit of a catch-22.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no.
I think we've also, well, I was going to say more positive news, but actually it's not necessarily positive. It's just more of news. Nancy Pelosi, the former Speaker of the House of Representatives from America, came to visit. She received, I wrote them down now so I don't say it wrong, she received an award, the Sutherland Leadership Award from UCD, and she was the inaugural recipient of the Fulbright Ireland Public Service Award. So I had not heard of either of these things before this, but I was...
Nor did I hear Nancy Pelosi was coming to Ireland.
Yeah.
Flew below the radar beforehand.
Yeah, I was going to say,
I only feel like I heard about it a few days beforehand even. Mm-hmm.
And I think that might have been on purpose, because they knew the reaction that they got and ended up getting in UCD was quite a...
Did they not expect it? Like,
I think they probably did, and that might be why it wasn't.
Yeah.
Because
usually
when you have someone high profile like that...
It would be more publicised.
Yes, and the university would be. I mean, I was surprised looking at some of the pictures that it was quite a low-key event. And the UCD student union president was dragged out of the event in UCD. Because she got the award on, I think, was it Sunday night? yeah. on Monday night, but she was at the university to get a degree as well, an honorary degree.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And there was, yeah, the UCD president was dragged from the room for...
Wow.
You didn't can look realize it on the College Tribune.
I'm going to have to look afterwards. That up.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting because she did make a comment in her interview in the ambassador's home that, you know, the Irish-US relations aren't going to be affected by our different stances on the Palestinian cause, which I thought was interesting and also sort of naive in a sense.
Yes.
I don't know. I think she underestimates the Irish people and what they stand for. I think it has a major impact, even people's like support of Biden. I think in Ireland, it's quite low compared to, say, like 4 years ago when he was running in the last election. I think it's having a major impact. And I think it's only the beginning as well that we're seeing it, because it's one of the first major things that we've gone against the US in. And a lot of the time, I might be overly critical of Ireland and the US, saying we're just trying to suck up to them. But I think she definitely underestimates us.
Yeah, no, I'm actually shocked by UCD slightly. I'm just like, okay, the backlash after this is going to be quite extreme for the future.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's going to be knock-on effects to this because people don't just like let things slide.
Yeah.
Especially when it comes to big things like that.
It's interesting, especially she also was talking about a United Ireland, which I also thought was very interesting. She said, as an American schoolgirl, she liked the idea of it, but it is something that has to be done by the Irish people. I think she was very much kind of avoiding commenting on it without swaying to either side of the debate. And I think it was more of a, we're already so divided on certain issues, I don't want to divide us even further on these issues.
She might need to apply that to others. Yeah. That approach to others.
It was definitely interesting. What do you think of her visit?
Because I only heard it now, I'm like shocked, genuinely. I'm just like, okay, interesting.
Yeah, I just felt that given everything that's going on, it was probably something that they had extended the offer and the honouring of the award months before the whole situation in the Middle East flared up. But, you know, sometimes you have to adapt to circumstances, and it's not a good look for the university.
Definitely not.
In the current climate, when there's such public support for the Palestinian cause in Ireland.
Yeah.
And given, you know, Nancy has had a few comments that have been interpreted as being very anti-Palestine.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, and she also is a representative of the US government because she's Democrat and Democrats are in the White House. So she's seen as tied to Joe Biden. So yes, there was an element of people protesting, you know, against the US through her visit, but also at her for what she had said.
Yeah.
And again, you know, it kind of brings back to this debate of, you know, can you park certain issues and not, you know, maybe protest about some things, but some causes are bigger. And yes, you know, she may go back now and say, well, you know, the Irish are, and that's what you want her to go back and say, the Irish people have this very strong view on it, and maybe that might influence, it mightn't, but all you can do is be, you know, do what we think is right.
Yeah,
I think she definitely thought it was an issue that we could park. I think going back now, maybe she'll be like, maybe not.
Mm.
I don't know if necessarily Ireland has the power to exactly influence the US in this sense. I think not. But I could be overly pessimistic.
But, you know, taking that argument, if so, you know, and people make that, but that's not an excuse to stay silent.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, just because you feel you mightn't have influence, you shouldn't.
Doesn't mean you shouldn't say it.
Say something.
Oh, yeah. Exactly.
And if, you know, we do, but I feel the US is probably, you know, it's coming around like way too slowly. It's still not where they need to be. And will they ever get there? No. But, you know, public opinion is generally ahead of the politicians on so many issues.
Yeah.
And I think in the States, like the young people especially, they are angry at Biden, as they are here.
Yeah.
For his stance on the war. And I think, you know, maybe they will come around, but, you know, there's so many internal politics in the US that is influencing the stance they're taking, that, you know, it's just, will you ever be able to square the circle with this issue?
Oh, never.
You
know? Not in the US.
And so, you know, is expecting them to do that then unrealistic, you know?
Yeah.
But again, I think it goes back to the point that shouldn't mean you shouldn't voice your opinions.
Oh yeah, no, there's no harm in trying, as I said.
And I think even with like Trump and Biden being the candidates for the next election, it just feels even more depressing, I suppose, since Biden is such a heavy stance on his support for Israel, that there isn't even a way, okay, this is what the US is doing, let's vote for this instead, because the other option is Trump.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I that's my fear, is that, you know, when Biden is doing so poorly in the polls, and, you know, it goes up and down a little bit, but one of the main issues is obviously his stance on Palestine.
Yeah.
Especially with younger voters. And when it actually comes down to it, you know, will they actually vote? You know, I think not showing up is going to be a huge problem.
Definitely.
In the US election. For,
because it's, at the moment, it's picking the lesser of two evils. Which is, it's tough.
And that's feeding back into our conversation just a minute ago about politics, is that there's no hope. You know, there's no candidate that is inspiring an awful lot of optimism.
The US is a...
But not just the US. I mean, it's even here. You know, I mean, some people, yes, have that in some of the opposition parties or even the government parties, you know, who's people who support them. But there isn't, you know, the optimism isn't kind of there.
Definitely. Because even when people, I know lots of my friends have asked me, Alice, who are you going to vote for? What party do you like for the next? I'm like, I actually don't really like any particular party. Like, I'm like, they're like, what party's good? I'm like, I don't know. Like, it's not exactly an amazing party that, like you said, represents young people, our views. And I think that is a big turnoff for people in the US. Here, it's having...
Globally.
It's honestly a global issue.
And also then are, you know, are the expectations not matching to what politics can actually do? Because it is about compromise.
Yeah,
and, you know, you very, very, very rarely achieve what you set out to and promise. And I mean, Obama is the case in point about that. You know, you saw all the hope and optimism that was his campaign.
Yeah.
And the feeling. And then, you know, 8 years later,
what
was left?
Yeah.
And I'm not putting it all on him, but, you know, was it a case of he raised the bar too high?
Yeah.
And then wasn't able to deliver when circumstances didn't allow him to deliver.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe, but so we're being very picky because we'd like optimism.
Yeah.
But you kind of also have to acknowledge that sometimes it's not possible to achieve.
Yeah, it's... Parties do make a lot of false promises, I suppose. It lures a voter in and then they get disappointed when it's not delivered on. And then that just increasingly feeds into the whole, everything is doomed, nothing's going to change.
It's a vicious circle.
Yeah, completely.
Yeah. Especially when we're hoping for optimism, but we're going into a period of complete pessimism with the far right. So, like, yay.
Yay. I think to maybe lighten the mood from that topic,
please.
We might put on a song. I'm looking through Caitlin's playlist. I'm like, I don't even recognize half these songs.
That's why Dervla O'Donovan makes it. I don't have music taste.
I think I'm going to put on Gloria by the Lumineers.
Ooh, very good choice.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, and we're back. So I just played Linger by the Cranberries. Everyone loves it, knows it.
They're having a moment again.
They are. Love them. So we have about 10 minutes left. So we were just talking a second ago while the songs are playing. We were like, is there any positive news we can talk about? And we came to the conclusion there's not, unfortunately, this week. So we have two topics that kind of touch on the areas that we've actually been talking about throughout today. So there's Trump's trial is happening at the moment. He was in trouble in court because he has been violating the gag order, basically slating the judge, you know, the opposition. At the moment, the judge will not make a ruling on it, but did mention to his lawyer, which I thought was really interesting, is that you're basically have no respect in court. It's like your word is nothing, because they were fighting the gag order by saying he's allowed to defend himself politically. So it's interesting that the judge is taking that stance, which I think people can appreciate. And then there was also David Pecker took the stand. He's basically an ex-publisher who helped kind of cover up, I'll say, stories that were coming out about Trump and the affairs he was having, and also kind of promote more positive stories about him. And basically it's presenting an outline for the trial about how he's, you know, meddled in the 2016 election. So it's, you know, only just beginning. Obviously, it's going to play out now over the next few weeks, but it's definitely very, very interesting to see how it started. What do we think?
The trial is a comedy in itself. He's falling asleep. Jurors were too scared to be a juror against him. It's a trial which, I don't know, will show the future, but like it's one of many. Like, he has 6-7 trials after this one.
Yeah.
For over nearly 100 violations of federal rulings. So like, he's in deep water, and I think this is how he's acting out the first one. The next, he's only going to get more manic and more crazy come the 7th. So, and this is one of the first things going against him.
And we've already seen the kind of protest that's been coming out against him, obviously.
Yeah.
If anyone hasn't seen it on the news, a protester lit themselves on fire and unfortunately passed away outside the courthouse, just kind of in protest of Trump. So it's definitely interesting to see how passionate people are, and it's understandable. He's, you know, he's done a lot of damage, and the risk of him getting elected now in the next election just seems to be coming higher and higher, even the further he goes into his cases, which is a scary thought for Americans.
Yeah, and it's actually a bit speechless sometimes.
Yeah.
It renders you speechless, because you're wondering, how did they end up here?
To this point,
where someone, you know, the main contender to oppose Biden is currently on trial.
Yeah.
And is using it to, you know, further enhance, you
his
know,
campaign.
But there's just no shame. And you see it with, you know, with Johnson in the UK. I mean, if you just have no shame, this is where it gets you. I mean, you literally, someone else would have gone to ground years ago over his stuff. But that's the nature of the beast with Trump, is, you know, that's what he is.
Yeah.
It's the trial is just, I mean, it's not like any other trial. I mean, you know, in some sense,
it's more of a reality show than.
Well, it is. But at the same time, it's deadly serious.
Yeah, it's scary.
But how serious can you take it when you're dealing with a character like Trump?
Yeah.
And the implications, I mean, the normal rules don't apply to him. And mm-hmm. they try to make them apply, but they can't. And there's so many, you know, there's so many variables, because he's running for the election. So that means, you know, it's much harder to gag him.
Yeah.
When, you know, and so then he gets away with saying a lot more about the jury, about the judge, than an ordinary citizen would. Even another politician who wasn't running and then, you know, I mean, the podcasts and the radio shows at the minute are all like the what ifs, you know, what if he's convicted and he's in jail? Will he get Secret Service protection? I mean, you know, and that like, while those questions are legitimate, it does feed into it too, mm-hmm. because, and it kind of gets sensationalized. But at the end of the day, it is serious, but American politics has reached the stage where you can't take it seriously, and you can't, you know, differentiate what's kind of the reality and what's this kind of show that's, you know, how do you describe it? I mean, some of it is literally like it's a freak show.
Yeah, definitely.
But it's also reality, and the kind of lines between the two are blurred. And that's just, you know, so what are the implications? I mean, I don't think anyone can tell what's going to be the case in November when the election, because so much has happened up to now.
Yeah.
And I think if anything, the further, more trouble he gets into, the more supported he will be. I don't think the trial will have any implications per se on his support, which is just so scary.
It is, and it's further polarizing his supporters from the mainstream system. And so it's just entrenching, each side's point of view.
Yeah.
And we're just at this stage where everyone is looking for the reinforcement of their own kind of beliefs.
Mm. Yeah.
And there's very little, there's no room for the middle ground in America now. Very
Definitely
little.
Not.
You know? And that's just, that it's depressing, you know?
Yeah.
It's also worrying that so many Americans don't believe in the judicial system. Or the fact that it's, in my knowledge, I know this is probably the first time in history where a trial has been used on both sides to prove a point in a campaign. This has both been used by Biden and Trump to push that Biden's bad and Trump's bad to win a presidential seat. That it's turned into a media show. We're going to hear sound bites, we're going to get snippets. It's going to get messy real quick. Yeah,
definitely.
It's interesting.
Definitely. And I think with Trump, his impact in Europe is something we can't underestimate. Everyone's obviously looking at America, seeing the freak show that's happening there, but it has very real implications for us, especially even with NATO or even US-Irish relations. It's just, you could talk forever about it, but it's not as if we can just look and point the finger, oh my God, look what's happening there. It's very real here as well, which I think people also kind of underestimate when they're just look and laugh at America.
And did we learn from 2016? No, because people still have that attitude. I mean, 2016, people were laughing at Trump and thought it was hilarious. Mm-hmm. And then he got elected and suddenly it wasn't funny.
No.
And I feel there's an element of that there again, that people are kind of writing him off, even though people are acknowledging that there's a real chance he'll get elected again. There's an element of not wanting to believe it'll actually happen.
Yeah.
And so then you kind of start feeding into the trial and you're kind of saying, Biden's going to be there anyway.
But
he's very, he's not, that's not a certainty that he'd be there in November.
Definitely.
You could literally do a whole host of shows on the American situation and what could or may not happen after the election. Yeah,
it's a scary time, definitely. Yeah. And I think even with our upcoming election, their election, there's just so many elections, it's uncertain times.
Very. But it's kind of change too is hopefully positive. And, there will be, and it's unsettling. So there will be negative aspects and stuff. But I'm a half class full person. So I try to find the optimism. It's not always easy.
Yeah, no,
and
that's a good
it
way
is
to
challenging,
be.
But you do have to try because you'd lose hope very quickly.
Yeah. No, Biden is coming under hot water again this week because he is passing the TikTok banning bill under the slate of the foreign aid bill. So it is interesting that they're trying to sneak that in.
Very interesting.
So
and Trump, for example, was opposed to that.
Oh, yeah.
Or is now opposed to it, but was in favor previously.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so, it's very hard to keep up. It literally changes even day by day sometimes.
It's hard to align either with either politician because they're so different in their beliefs. Biden is so, pro-Israel, pro the TikTok ban, but he's the Democrat candidate, which would kind of go against what, Democrat supporters would stand for. And then Trump is in support of getting rid of the TikTok ban, which would not be a kind of Republican conservative idea. I think the whole belief systems of these parties are so misaligned with their supporters as well, which is such a scary time to see how the voters will turn out.
Yeah, and if that's probably what it'll hinge on is total turnout.
Definitely.
And in a few swing states. It's just the mind-boggling thing about, again, that's a whole rabbit hole you could go down to about, is America a democracy? What it represents?
Oh,
it's just,
no.
Yeah,
because that's federalism. No.
Yeah. That's one thing Nancy Pelosi did comment on as well when she was here is fear for democracy. And, she kind of was talking about it in more of from what I understood of it, a more Russian, China context. But I think, we need to look in our own own house.
Oh, you do. You have to sort your own affairs, at the same time. And again, the US approach very often is focused on outside their own.
Outside villain.
Yeah. And sometimes you need to look inside and sort the issues at home.
Yeah, Orban and Trump are buddies. So he's visited him a few times this past year for photo ops and stuff. So I'm
we definitely know we have our issues.
Our back door's being dragged into the US.
Yeah, we have our issues here for democracy that definitely in the EU that are topical issues at the moment, but I think we're a lot more aware of them than the US necessarily is. I think democracy there is just a scary time for it.
No, and not to underestimate some of the challenges we have, we are in a better position. Mm-hmm. And I think looking at the experiences of America and some countries in Europe, even the UK, which is, again, we won't go there, it does allow us to maybe put in place measures that will hopefully prevent us getting to that point.
Definitely.
That we can just go, okay, you know, we don't want to end up there. We're maybe starting along some of the paths, but let's pull it back. Mm-hmm.
Definitely. Yeah. I think we're kind of running out of time.
So keep going.
30 seconds.
So just to wrap it up, democracy needs to be worked on.
Yeah. 100%.
Please vote. Yeah. Don't be too depressed.
Yes, May 20th is the last day you can register to vote for the EU elections. May 11th is the last day you can register for postal voting.
Fantastic. Well done, Caitlin, for knowing the dates.
It's not all doomed.
No. Not all doomed, registered vote.
And I think I'll put on a little happy song as we leave. So I'm going to put on Astrovan by Mountjoy. Thanks for tuning in.
Thanks so much.
And we'll be back next week at 10 a.m.
Bye. Bye.